Bebitch and Finley, high noon in the District of Columbia. Big thank you to Fred Smoot for stopping by. That was a fun surprise. Always good to catch up with the mouth of the South, Mr. Fred Smoot. I did get to sit down and talk to Zach Ertz earlier in the week. You're going to hear that in a minute. But I just briefly, the Commanders aren't playing Sunday. There's no Commanders game to occupy your Sunday. What are you going to do? For me, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I think I'm going hiking in the morning. I'm going to wake up and take my girls to the Billy Goat Trails, hopefully. I haven't really looked at the weather. Hopefully it's agreeable. And I fly to Cincinnati at 12:30, I believe, out of Dulles. And I'm gonna be gone for a full week. So I kind of think I should Uber and not have my car there for a full week. You know, that's just a lot of parking to have to pay for a full week. So that's kind of my mindset for Sunday. I land in Cincinnati at like 2:30. I got to do some work for 4. Ideally, and this is probably overly optimistic, the best time to sit down on a couch or a chair or sit on the floor if times are tough, but the best time one can enjoy as an NFL fan is Sunday from like 3:30 to 4:30. The term that has gained popular acceptance is the witching hour. It's when all the 1 o'clock games are finishing, and usually at least one, often more than one, are coming down to the wire. And I think it's going to be fascinating. I'm hoping I can be somewhere by 3:30 to watch the end of the games. And then I'm actually just going to watch the 4 o'clock games, Landfill. Don't mess with me because I'm going to watch some football. 4 o'clock games are awesome. Ravens Cowboys, I think, will be a true dogfight. You've got the Ravens are desperate. The Cowboys, after getting smoked last week, are pretty close to desperate. You've also got Lions Cardinals, which I think is going to be a shootout. If you look, that's got to be the highest total of the week, right? 51.5. I'd be tempted to go over that, frankly. Yeah, that's the highest total. Think about it this way, dude. Lions-Cardinals is a 51.5-point total. The lowest tonight, you've got Jets-Patriots, 38.5. But the lowest total I feel like I've seen in a while, probably this season, is Chargers-Steelers, Sunday 1 o'clock, 35.5. Those are low totals. I mean, that's almost two full scores difference from Lions Cardinals to Steelers Chargers.
Those are almost preseason numbers.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that is really low. And I get you've got two limited offenses, two ball control coaches, two guys playing a lot of defense. Chiefs Falcons is Sunday night game. I'll be watching. Is Cincinnati in the same time zone? Does anyone know that answer?
As
here.
Yeah, like, I think they are.
That, okay. Well, that I kind of wish it was Central because it's. I like Central time zone for sports might be the winner, because when you're out west and you're watching football in the morning, it's like, I mean, 9 a.m. for NFL kickoff, 8 a.m.
Right? I mean, 10. No. That sounds kind of awesome, 10. Actually.
Yeah, but dude, then like if you work and you get home for Monday night football, like it's over at 8:30. Then what do? Go to sleep? Maybe people out west are well rested, unlike us.
I mean, that's a hell of a lot better than it being over at like 11:45. That's miserable.
See, I like Central though, dude, because then Monday Night Football starting at 7:15 and it's over at 10:30. That's perfect. Then you just go to bed.
Like Denver or something has got to be. They got to be 2 hours behind
us,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be perfect, actually.
What is Phoenix 2 or 3?
I believe it's 3.
I think it like switches because they don't do daylight savings or something.
Yeah, Arizona's strange.
Arizona is strange. Right now in Phoenix, according to my computer, it's 9:10 a.m.
So they're 3 hours behind us.
Okay. But I think in the winter it's only 2 because remember we did the Super Bowl there in the winter? I don't know. Landfill, what are the odds of me screwing something up when I'm doing the remotes from Arizona with time zones?
Approximately 1,000%, which is astonishing because it's just 3 hours. Like, you just have to be there at 7 Phoenix time. Like, that's not that difficult.
Well, yeah, hopefully it works, dude. So it's my understanding, I think part of the reason for going out to Arizona to practice is that
they have a game out there.
Well, yes, that's part of it. Good point. But I think a big part of it is just to keep them in their completely normal routine. So they're going to keep practicing in the afternoons like they do here in Ashburn, which means our radio show in Arizona starts at 7 a.m., right?
I mean, for like, you, for everybody here for on me. The East Coast, the correct coast, it'll still start at 10.
Yeah, I think I'll just do it from the hotel. I don't know that there's, that, like, I could go to practice, but they're not going to be practicing for hours. So it'd just be me sitting there. It will be cool, though. They're practicing at Arizona State, which this, I don't know if they're at the stadium or what. I don't know where Arizona State's going to practice while they're out there. But, you know, these are all things we're gonna figure that out together. Landfill, no Commanders game to watch on Sunday. What will you do on Sunday?
I will take the opportunity to watch football. And actually, I think that it's great because, you know, you're not going to have any kind of emotional investment in anything. You can just actually enjoy it. There's some solid games at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And there are also some terrible games.
The games at 1 o'clock I'd like to watch. I think Chargers-Steelers could be good.
Bears, I think it'll be Colts, close. I don't think it'll be good, but it'll be close.
Texans-Vikings could be good.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
Sam Darnold.
And Eagles-Saints should be pretty good as well.
Eagles-Saints should be quite good. Are the Saints for real? What the hell are the Eagles? You know? I bet, you know how they do like the look-ahead lines with a lot of this stuff? Like early in the summer when the schedule comes out, so there are certain like Vegas sports books that'll give you lines for every game. I bet the original line or what people thought the Eagles-Saints line would be and what it is are very different.
The
Saints are favored by 3. So just straight home field in the Superdome.
There are also a couple of absolutely atrocious games Sunday at 1. The Bears and the Colts and the Giants and the Browns.
By far the worst game on the board, though, is Panthers-Raiders at 4 o'clock.
Yes, that is... I mean, that is just brutal.
Jeff, what will you do on Sunday?
Man, Jeff's not here.
Where is he?
I have no idea.
Bears-Colts appeals to me in like a NASCAR wait-for-the-wreck kind of way. Dude, I just got this email from one of these like betting websites, not like a actual like betting... Like, you can't actually bet with them, but it's like betting analytics, that kind of stuff. Probably similar to BetQL, I guess. Does this make any sense to you? So none of the rookie quarterbacks have thrown a touchdown pass yet. Jaden has run for 2. Bo Nix has run for 1. Caleb hasn't thrown any. Nix and Caleb have thrown a bunch of picks. Jaden hasn't thrown any of those. What of the rookie quarterbacks, who do you think is the first to reach 5 passing touchdowns, Lamphill?
Well, they're all at 0, so I guess
they're all at 0.
There's not a ton of reason. I guess I would go with Jaden because they seem to be moving the ball the best. Bo Nix has just been absolutely atrocious, and Caleb Williams just looks completely lost out there. So at least the Commanders are consistently moving the ball down the field, getting in the red zone.
Right. I am shocked by this. Their percent chance is Caleb Williams with 38% chance, Jaden Daniels with 30% chance, and Bo Nix at 26% chance of being the first rookie quarterback to reach 5 passing touchdowns.
That's just disrespectful.
The odds, they say, would be plus 160 for Caleb, plus 225 for Jaden, plus 275 for Bo. And then, I mean, if you want to get nuts, you could get plus 3,500 for Drake May, which I think is kind of silly. I don't understand that at all to the point where I'd like to bet on it. Like, these aren't real odds. This is just like a hypothetical talking point. But, dude, the Commanders threw – so I think they've had 8 possessions, right, in both games. So that's 16 possessions. I think you take 2 of them out because 2 of them were kneel downs before halftime. So of the possessions where they tried to advance the ball, now you're at 14 possessions. And they've had scoring opportunities on 12 of them, if my math's right. I mean, because I know against the Bucks, they missed 2 field goals. Like that, they had 5 of 8 drives with scoring opportunities. And against the Giants, they never punted and kicked 7 field goals. So, like, they're at least getting into scoring opportunities on damn near every drive. Every possession where they attempt to advance the football, they're getting a scoring opportunity.
Yeah, one of those, I mean, they're going to get in the end zone eventually on one of those.
Yeah. Dude, somebody just misses a tackle and they run one in from 25 yards out. I don't know how it will happen, but, like, it's going to happen.
Right.
Like there's a sense of inevitability versus watch it. Now, the Texans' defense is good, and maybe we shouldn't mock that, like, for what Chicago's doing. And Chicago's got a chance this week against the Colts, although I actually think the Colts will win that thing. I don't understand how that could be anybody but Jaden, frankly.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess Chicago's got better weapons, maybe, but
I don't know that they do, but both –
DJ Moore's a player.
Caleb Williams and Bo Nix have just been awful. Like, there hasn't been anything to like looking at either of them. They've both been terrible.
Terrible. What was the rookie of the year thing you saw? Jaden's numbers have gone up and, like, back down?
No, so Jaden was 2nd at the start of the year. He's still 2nd.
To Caleb, who? Caleb?
Caleb Williams was 1, but now Caleb Williams is down at 3rd, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is 1st, which I think, again, is disrespectful. That is essentially a award that goes to a quarterback, and Jaden Daniels is clearly the best rookie quarterback. And actually, if you just look, you zoom out, take a look around the league, quarterback play is kind of down generally. He's like
way
top
down.
Half of the league, maybe top 10 quarterback in the league at quarterback statistically. How that guy isn't the runaway favorite for the Offensive Rookie of the Year is baffling to me.
Dude, in just about every stat, Jaden is killing it. Now, it is worth pointing out that Malik Willis has an 80% completion percentage. Gardner Minshew's at 77.5%. Derek Carr's at 77%. Then Jaden Daniels checks in at 75.5%. Leadville, for whatever incredibly dumb reason, NFL.com, though, doesn't list completion percentage with a minimum number of attempts. Maybe, you know, through 2 weeks it's too hard to set a minimum. But do you know who – this is NFL.com. I'm not making this up. Do you know who the leading passer is in the NFL in terms of completion percentage?
Well, it's got to be somebody who's thrown, like, 1 to 2 passes. So that kind of – it leads me to believe that maybe it's like a wide receiver or somebody who got injured very early.
It's a punter.
Ah, who
Jack,
is
it? Jack Fox, punter for the Lions. They ran a fake punt and he completed it. He's 1 of 1 for 17 yards. Shout out to Jack Fox, leading the NFL in completion percentage. Now, some would say, the haters, the ops would say, that is how I led the country in three-point shooting percentage in high school. But, you know, the facts are facts. Jack Fox, shout out to him, through 2 weeks of the NFL, highest passing rate in the league. Now, Malik Willis, the Green Bay situation is fascinating because I think they want to get Jordan Love back out there. What they did to win that game with Willis was really exciting. It was a really, really well-coached plan, but I don't know that it was I don't know how, like, replicable that is. Also, I just thought of this with the touchdowns. Landy, Eckler had a touchdown that got called back. And did B-Rob score, or was it just a really big play that got called back with OZ? When he had that, like, illegal, I think they called him for clipping, even though the damn defensive back, like, turned around.
I can't remember there.
But Eckler definitely scored,
yeah.
And that got called back. Imagine, like, for all the talk of Gano got hurt, imagine if Eckler, if they didn't call a relatively, it was a relatively fair call on the hold, but still, like that game was just bananas. And I think trying to pin it on Gano being hurt is an oversimplification. Now, if you want to pin it on Daboll for not keeping an extra kicker on his roster when he had an empty roster spot, different conversation. I imagine John Mara's having thoughts about that kind of stuff. Lanville, one thing we haven't talked about at all is the Commanders. I applaud them for this. And whether they were strong-armed into it by this Montana senator that decided this issue mattered to him, probably just to gain political points or not, I'm still cool with it. The Commanders posted a new memorial in the memory of Walter Blackie Wetzel, who was he designed the old logo. And it's got deep roots with the Blackfeet tribe, actual, you know, Native Americans in Montana. And I think it's cool. I think there is a path, man. Like, people can do two things at once. There is a path to a new name and understanding that the old name was derogatory to people, but you can still honor the history appropriately. There's a path to that, and I think the new ownership understands how to get there, and I like that as a step. As a step for us. Quick break, and then Dan Quinn will be talking. Beamish and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Right now, you get to hear from Dan Quinn. First day of Bengals week, folks. Buckle up. Here's DQ.
Preparation that goes into Cincinnati and you know, the challenges that they provide as well. So with all that said, ready to get rocking with you guys.
How have you felt about John Allen and Deron Payne, just in how they've done through the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, through the first two, I definitely know their presence inside. Some games you get more chances to rush, and some games you don't. So what we want to always make sure is we're finding the matchups when we can and get into some dropback stuff. Sometimes when you have the production they've had, other people go into the game saying, okay, these two are not going to ruin the game as well. So a little bit of both, but yeah, we're definitely looking forward to them for this week and really you know, making their impact. And they want that too.
Brian Robinson, has anything surprised you about what he did in week two or what he's done in the first 2 weeks, really?
I wouldn't say surprised, Nikki, but what I would say is maybe coming in, I didn't know his hands were as good as they are, just from me coaching against him. And so that's been one of the things that I've been really impressed by. I knew this guy was a rare competitor. I just knew that. But what I didn't know was that he was complete in that way in terms of running and catching and being outside and doing that too. So that would have been something. I wouldn't say I was surprised at, but I was like, man, that's cool to see.
When you say rare competitor coming in, what did you see to tell you that, and what are you seeing with that now?
Well, first I would say, you know, coming out of college. And so he may have not had as many carries early on, but neither would a lot of people who had some of the guys in the backfield in front of him when he was a freshman there. So what I thought early on, that showed a lot of perseverance to say, hey, your time is going to come here. But when you were, you know, playing behind some of the guys that were, you know, absolutely hitting it at the highest level, I'm sure some of those standards and toughness came through that. And then coaching against him, tackling plan, how do you go about him? You got to get down to the legs because of the physicality. Seeing him step through some tackles, that's a big deal. And so it wasn't, you know, a normal tackle a lot of times with him based on his size and his strength. So the rare competitor comes out when he gets one-on-one and sized up on somebody. Like, you better have your tackling plan correct, or he can make you look bad.
And going back to Allen Payne, obviously a lot of double teams last week. So how do you then work with that, knowing if they're getting all these double teams, obviously in theory somebody else could be freed up. So how do you work around that? What are your thoughts on that and how that has been handled so far?
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I think what we're probably talking about first, John, is like first and second down, because the play pass, you can still do a double, but it's a run action. So I think when you're talking about trying to get four hands on them, that's – it didn't happen every snap, but that is something, you know, on the first and second downs. How do you beat it? Some blitzes where you're looping and getting outside. And so those are some of the ways that we do that. If we had actually, you know, gotten him down a few times in Tampa, I would say the conversation's probably a little bit different. But that's competing and that's ball. So what do we like to do? Get some on the move. That helps guys who have that kind of quickness for their size. And we'll continue to do that.
In week one with Terry, he didn't get the ball until kind of midway through the third quarter for the first time. This week, you were able to get the ball into his hands a little bit earlier, but not for a lot of yards. How can you balance getting the ball to your explosive players and getting them the ball in explosive situations?
Yeah, well, I would say try to move Terry around into different spots, which, you know, is important because he is, you know, has that, like, playmaking ability, so you want to find the spots to go. As we're going just into our second, you know, full lap together, there'll be more ops for him than we need them to be. What you don't want to do is force the ones that aren't there and make sure, even though in a certain route he may be the primary read, but if that one's taken away, that you don't force that one and go to somewhere else. I really respect that about Jaden, of making good processing decisions. Sometimes you have a play design that's, you know, going to go to one place and it's not there. So the worst thing you could do is try to force something in that's not there. And so I'm pleased that we're not doing that. Do we want to get him involved? Man, you bet, in the biggest way. And so the catch and run opportunities, I thought we had, you know, one or two chances that we didn't go his way. One we had a penalty on that I thought on a trap pass, I think Nick might have been down the field on a slant. That was going to be a big place. That one doesn't count as one of the targets to go.
And then on the offensive line with Brandon Coleman, I guess what did you make of the game on Sunday and his growth from week one to week two?
Yeah, I think the good news is we're trending up for him. And so that's what we were wanting to see, that, you know, more practice time, more playing time to go. So I continue to see that part improve. As we're going week to week, we'll keep assessing it and move from there. But it was good to see just more playing and more going. And I think the same thing for Johnny Newton. You know, it was maybe a week later, but got in, you know, for near the prescribed amount of plays that we had allotted for this game, and now we get to do more. And those two guys need reps and playing time, and so I'm glad that the trajectory is finally here. We had to battle through some of the injuries early on with both of them. But we knew at the time, if you guys remember what I was talking about, we knew this wasn't season ending and those kind of things. And it was frustrating at the time for them and for us. But the good news is now, like, okay, those are behind us and we're moving forward and they're gaining more experience as we're going.
Is Brandon Coleman on the pitch count?
No.
Sticking with Newton, is that trajectory going up? You expecting more snaps from him?
We do, yes. So it was by design, coming off an injury, to make sure that we weren't, you know, going past where we thought was the right amount in his first game. And so now that we get that, then we get more available for us, you know, moving into this week.
And what do you think of that interior D-line group so far through two games?
Yeah, I think we just addressed it before you came, to say, how do we get more production with the inside guys on the early down? Some movement helps where they can get outside and get out of some double teams to go. We've got a lot of faith and belief in them and Johnny inside, so we're excited to get those guys revved up and going.
Hey there, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Looking at the first 2 weeks in the season, are you already seeing some recurring areas of improvement? And if so, what are some of those?
Yeah, I would say, are we a lot better than we were at the start of training camp? You bet. You know, like, I don't know, what, 6 or 8 weeks later, I'm hearing the communication improving on both sides, but that one is, you know, like from here to here to here. So I would say there's some things that we've probably gone in that way, Candy, from like a D to then a C and a C plus. And so not to where we're going to be, but I do feel like that has been improved. The communication at the line of scrimmage and combination blocks, I think we probably had talked about that at one time, maybe when we didn't have a lot of the offensive line together, and how would we do with not having a lot of reps together. So I'm seeing those combinations, those techniques working together. So that's been another one in the running game that I've been pleased with.
And on Tell the Truth Monday, I think last week you shared with us one of the kind of categories that you all discussed, the starting field position. So how do you think you all did this past week?
We did not win that one on the starting field position. And so that's a big one for us, to make sure, you know, that we have really unique ops to go. When we had the holding penalty on the opening play, that was a big shift, you know, to know that here we are, get a chance to go all the way on the opening kick and had a foul onto that one. So I love the big tackle we had. I think it was T.O. that knocked one down, you know, right on the 15 or 18 yard line. That's a big play. So for us, it factors into everything. Like, we didn't punt in the game, which is unusual, but those are some, you know, swings that get into that as well. But it's a big factor. The turnover margin, that was, you know, a number one top of the pile to say, if we can win the ball, we got a chance to go win the game. And so that was one. The tackling margin was better than we had the previous week. So those were two things that arrow went up.
Hey, Coach. The first question I have is, Francis Tiafoe was here to address the team. What was it like to have him here?
Well, first, it was really cool because he's very authentic and very real and very honest, and he really connected with a lot of the players. So we did not let the team know that he was coming through, but we had actually spoken about his journey the week before, and we were talking. The message was a little bit about perseverance and gratitude for people making sacrifices for you and for his family moving here from Sierra Leone, and just his journey coming up. And so we wanted to spend some time with them, and most of the questions with the players were talking about performance and routines and getting ready and mindset and how do you react after a bad play or a good play. And so he's very strong from the neck up as well, and we noticed that right away. So we really enjoyed spending the day with him.
And sticking with the question that Candy asked, is it a particular area 2 weeks into the season that is getting close to what you want to see from them on this team?
That's a good question. I would say taking care of the ball, we're doing a nice job of that, Candy, on the offensive side. So I'd say that's really important for us to get into the plus. We've got to create more takeaways. And so I'd say we're getting closer because we're having a really good conscious to take care of the ball, but now the defense has to knock a few out, because then that really affects what we were talking about earlier with Candy, to say, how does field position change? You get a takeaway, you get chances to give the offense another drive. And so I would say we're closer into that, but not to where I think we'll get to. But if we're talking progress, then I would say, yeah, I think we have a real thoughtful approach to the ball, and that part's really important, because if we get that right, then a lot of other things can come into place as we're trying to establish who we are and our identity. And it's going to take a few weeks for that to come into fully, express ourselves of how we want to go. The speed improved, not to be confused with the standard. And so that's what we're chasing, and that's what we're going to go after. And that's why, it's a fun group to coach, because they're down for the challenge. They're down for the things to work on. And so that, as a coach, makes you excited, because the progress, it happens in these big spurts. You coil up, it's like, boom, and you land at another spot. You coil up and you land at another spot. And so all of these games are opportunities for us to go and improve and get better. And I love that, today, as the week's starting, it's a lot on Cincinnati, but there's plenty of us in there, too, of things that we want to tighten up.
This is the first premier window game for the team, a Monday Night Football game. How are you thinking about talking to the team about playing in a national spotlight game for the first time?
To embrace the buildup for it and enjoy it, because it's a really cool experience, and one that, for the players that haven't done it before, to enjoy it. But it'll really come down to us. That's my message, to say our style, our play, and how we get down. Once the game kicks off, it'll be like normal if we function in that way. But I want them to enjoy the buildup, and knowing there's a routine that goes into place for a night game. What does the day of the game look like? We have some meetings and things that day, but we have to be at our best in the evening that day. And so we've had some experience with that in the preseason with some night games, but just going through that process, having the younger players lean into the older guys onto that, it's a big deal. And we're really excited for it.
Hey, Dan, how did Noah Brown fit in as a receiver and as a physical presence for you guys?
Yeah, boy, what a first start for him, I thought, in a really cool way of having some trust already with Jaden. I thought Jaden absolutely ripped the dagger that went inside on the last drive to Noah. He's an aggressive, strong player. I think, he demonstrated that in the game. So he's worked really hard to try to, learn it and get involved. And so as he's going at the receiver position, it's really all hands on deck. And we like to feature the guys in different ways. I know it was a topic earlier, who's two and all of this, and I don't really see it that way. I see this as all hands on deck, and they go and attack and battle and feature them in different ways. And so I love that they play on special teams and return punts and cover kicks, and it really demonstrates team at the highest level. And so positions like that, where you've got a lot of competitive guys, it's a lot of fun to coach.
And sort of a broad defensive question. There are some games, there may have been one this last week that you guys were in, where a receiver is just getting target after target after target, even though people know that that guy is probably going to get the ball. When things like that happen, I'm not really talking about this last game. From a
Sounds like you are.
It's a good.
With all due respect, you're still not allowed to say
it's
that.
It's a bird of thought. But no, when that's happening, is it the receiver is just that good? The offensive scheme is putting him in situations to get him up? Because obviously, you know, when it's the best receivers league, you know that's going them and that they still get 10 plus targets.
Yeah, and it's a fair question. So what I really thought was an excellent job. Most of the time when that happens, a player has to move around to different locations because maybe you and the fans have heard, you know, bracketing somebody, which can be good down in the red zone because there's a person behind there called the 12th man who's the back line. So when you bracket somebody, that's called in and outing. So you're not the threat of it going vertical because there's an end line there. Out in the field, sometimes you have to high-low double team because if you bracket them and the guy runs through it, there's no one deep to go. So putting guys in different locations is a good way to do that, to feature them to go. In that particular instance, there were some times that neighbors had a double on him. And, you know, if you lose a leverage or do one of those things, it always comes back to fundamentals and techniques, right? So that is no different, really, than how did the pass rusher, you know, get, you know, this many sacks or that type of thing. So the unique players, and he's going to be one. He's very strong, very competitive. I was certainly impressed by him. But moving people around is one way that people try to do that.
B. Mitch Finley here. That is Commanders head coach Dan Quinn talking live in Ashburn in advance of today's practice. Big, big game coming up Monday Night Football in Cincinnati. Nobody go anywhere. There's a man with a gun over there. Commanders just made an announcement. They signed Justin Hollins to the practice squad. It's another defensive end. Something to keep in mind there. Remember Colin Farrell popped up on the injury report late last week. He obviously played, but Hollins he bounced around. He was a fifth-round pick back in 2019 of the Broncos. Won a Super Bowl with the Rams. Kind of a fringe roster player, but something to keep in mind. When they're adding guys this time of year, it's usually about position depth. And perhaps that means more. We'll find out shortly. Commanders headed out to the practice field in moments. Get our first look at the group we're going to see Monday night in Cincinnati. I thought Dan Quinn had an awesome answer. It was a good question from George Wallace at WTOP. Kind of like, hey, coach, you know, you're going to face a team that's 0-2 that many thought was a Super Bowl contender, and it's Monday Night Football, and it's at their place. How do you prepare for that? And Quinn explained, you know, it's going to be loud. It's going to be raucous. It's going to be an awesome atmosphere. But once you get in the game, everybody's fighting for their lives. And that is just so true. Now, I think the biggest time things like that really start to matter is if you make mistakes, because then it feels like they compound. And it feels like you're coughing in a movie theater and everyone's staring at you. You know what I mean? And when you start to get that feeling like you're drowning and everything just starts to pile on, that's when it can come undone. And that's when crowd noise and tough atmospheres really start to make an impact. What I'm fascinated to see, because let's be real, week one in Tampa was an away game, and the Tampa crowd was fine, but there were a ton of Skins fans there, and it was so damn hot, nobody was really making that much noise. Jaden hasn't been in a pro environment like he's going to experience Monday night yet. Now, I think it's really foolish that, I think maybe because like on the East Coast, we tend to be more pro football fans than college football fans, but if people don't think Jaden Daniels has stared down crowd noise, they're nuts. What the SEC is like, I mean, Jaden Daniels played at Alabama last year. He played at Ole Miss, played at Mississippi State. That's like their arch rival. Like, he's played in some really, really loud places, games. Just playing at home at LSU is nuts. But, I mean, they played at Bama at 7:45 at night. That, no offense to Bengals fans or NFL fans, period, that Tuscaloosa crowd for a night game with LSU coming to town is probably louder than any NFL crowd. So, like, the actual crowd noise stuff, not that big of a deal. He's handled it, but he's been unflappable so far. All of the BS, Top Golf, he didn't care. The preseason, cool. At Tampa, home against the Giants, he's the same kid. He's just Cali cool. This is the first real, real test, and the Bengals are pretty darn good. I'm fascinated to see how it shakes out. The other thing I'm fascinated for, we haven't done it. I don't think we've done it in like 2 days. We're going to open these damn phone lines up. Hit the button, Jeff, assuming you're sitting there. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. It is Bleep You Thursday. Whoever you're mad at, here's what I need you to do. You let me know who has wronged you, okay? What has gone wrong in your life? Who you mad at? Bleep You Thursday, next.